Well, hey, everybody, it's great to see you, whether you're here in the room or joining us online. It's an honor to have you along for the ride. Before we get to the talk today, though, I have a brief personal update because this is a very significant day in my family, in my own journey. My eldest son, Carter, graduated from Forest Hills Northern on Tuesday. That was good, yep. And today is his graduation open house, and what's going to happen, and we'll make sure this goes on social media, is kind of a big deal. I will be wearing a Michigan State hoodie, okay? Yep. Yep. Met with the counselor. He prescribed some gummies to help me get through. maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so just pray for me if you would. But we are in the fourth week of a series called Letting Go and Moving Forward. It's all about letting go of the things that are weighing you down and moving forward into the life that God has for you. And as many of you know, we began this series a few weeks ago by asking a really interesting question. And it's a question people like me think about a lot, but it goes like this. Why doesn't everyone who attends church regularly end up looking like Jesus? Because if we're being honest, they don't, right? I mean, if you think about it, we all have friends, and we've known them for a long time. We knew them before they attended church regularly. We've known them while they've been attending church. It's been a while. And for some of them, these people, man, it shows. Jesus has made a real difference in their lives. They're more patient and generous and loving and gracious and kind than they were before they committed to regular church attendance. But see, most of us also have friends who have attended church for just as long, heard the same talks, sung the same songs, sat in the same small groups. But, I mean, studying Jesus hasn't really made an observable difference in their lives. And so in many ways, this series is my attempt to answer the question, why? And as I've mentioned, I'm more convinced than ever that it has to do with what the authors of the Bible call the heart. And of course, I'm not speaking of the organ that pumps blood through your body, but rather they speak of it as this invisible, intangible thing that drives your life. They say it's the source of what you say and what you do. It's like your emotional center. And as such, they say that it's absolutely critical that you need to get it clean and you need to keep it clean. And that said, it really shouldn't surprise us that they talk a lot about our hearts. And one of the most famous verses on this, and I've shown this to you each week in the series, came from Israel's King Solomon. He lived around 1,000 years before the time of Jesus. And in a collection of wisdom that he pulled together late in his life to sort of bless future generations, this collection is called Proverbs. It made its way into the Hebrew Bible, which is our Old Testament. Solomon said this, and again, this is in a collection of wisdom. So he says, above all else, like your top priority, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. In other words, Solomon taught that guarding your heart is the thing that matters the most in your life, because a wounded heart really can impact everything else. And that's what this series is all about. For the 4 weeks leading up to Memorial Weekend, we are getting painfully specific about four different things that, if they become lodged in your heart, may be keeping you from letting go and moving forward into the sort of life that Jesus intends for you to live. The four things that we've talked about in the series, we've got guilt, jealousy, anger, and greed. And we've already noted, I'm just going to catch you up if you haven't been with us, but guilt is that voice that rises up inside of you from time to time when you're with somebody who you've hurt, and you start to say, you know what, I owe you. I took something from you, I hurt you, and now I owe you. That was week one. Week two, jealousy. That's the voice that rises up time to time when we feel ripped off. We see someone that has something that we want, but really our issue isn't with that person. It's not their fault. If you dig down, it's like, well, God owes me. He owes me more. He owes me something more like they have. That was week two. Week three, we talked about anger. Anger is the voice that says, you owe me. Like, you hurt me. You took something from me, and now you owe me. That was last week. And then this week, you get to talk about greed, which I'm going to argue is the voice that cries out from time to time, I owe me. And, okay, so a little bit about greed. I have a suspicion that if you and I were to meet up at Starbucks or any other coffee shop of your choosing, but I would choose Starbucks, and we had a conversation about this topic, we would both admit that we could be a bit more generous, but neither one of us would consider ourselves to be greedy.
In fact, I was preparing for this week. I thought, I don't know that I've ever met anyone who admitted to being greedy. And here's why I think that is. Greed of the enemies of the heart, greed, I would argue, is the most tricky because it camouflages itself often as a virtue. That's why people who struggle with greed say things like, well, I'm just careful with money. I mean, that sounds like a good thing, right? Or I'm just looking out for my future. Also sounds good. Or I just don't want to be a burden to anyone as I get older. And that, again, sounds good too. But there seems to be something lurking beneath those comments. Plus, when we think of greed, I don't know about you, but I tend to imagine someone like this guy. Remember him? Ebenezer Scrooge. It's not a real guy. You know, whatever. But someone who sits around with like piles of gold coins and chooses to live in poverty because he can't spend anything and he certainly can't give anything away to help anyone else. I mean, the dude doesn't have a compassionate bone in his body. He's the embodiment of greed. And we think, I'm not like that. See, but with our time together today, I want to make the argument that there are actually different kinds of greed. And when any of them gets lodged in your heart, it becomes a grid through which you make all your financial decisions, and consequently, it also impacts your relationships. So that said, and this is fortunate for us, Jesus gave an incredible insight on how to deal with greed during his time on earth. And this shouldn't surprise you at this point in the series especially, but this insight centers around the idea that greed really isn't a financial issue, even though it looks like it is. It's actually an issue of the heart. He said it this way one day to a crowd who had gathered near the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee to listen to him. He said, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed." In other words, Jesus said, greed, like ice cream at Baskin-Robbins, comes in more than one flavor, right? There's the Scrooge kind, when someone is rendered incapable of compassion, but there's also another kind that's a little more subtle and can operate in the background of your life and keep you from moving forward. And Jesus described that flavor this way. He said, life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. And I would argue that with this simple phrase, Jesus identified a particularly dangerous strand of greed in which someone comes to believe that life's purpose is to accumulate. And I don't know that anyone would like verbalize that, but again, subconsciously, what is your purpose? My purpose is to get more stuff. I mean, this is what they dealt with in the ancient world. Aren't you so glad we don't have this problem today? Everybody with me on this? Yeah, right. Like, we're the first generation in history to invent self-storage units. Are you familiar with these? Like, you're driving down Fulton and there's another one, right? And we did this, of course, because we ran out of room in our attics and our basements and our garages for all our stuff. I was thinking about it this week. I'm like, just imagine if there was like an alien on a spaceship and he could cloak himself so we didn't know he was there, but he was just watching us and watching us live our lives. I would argue he might come to the conclusion that if we humans don't shop, we die, okay? Because they might think, man, they build shopping centers. Some of them you walk into and they have like a covered internal area to shop. They also make strip malls, which you can drive right to the store that you want to shop. And they go to these places and they buy things even though they don't always need them. And they've invented a system more recently where they can shop for things they don't always need on their mobile devices, right? Like 24 hours a day, which are then delivered to their homes in an amazingly short period of time in strange, dark gray, electric-powered vans with smiley faces on the side. Mm-hmm. One visited my house at 4 a.m. and my boxer dog almost came unglued. Anyway, the aliens look at us and say, man, they have closets full of clothes, but they still buy more clothes. And they have a kitchen full of gadgets, but they still buy more gadgets. Some of them they don't even unbox. They end up in the basement and then in the storage unit. They must have to buy stuff in order to survive. That's what Jesus seems to be talking about. There's a subtle type of greed that gets us to believe that our purpose is to purchase. And I know, you know, if you are at this point are thinking, dude, I got out of bed and drove to church for this? I mean, you just trashed our entire culture. If I wanted to feel this bad about myself on a Sunday morning, I should just go bowling. I'm terrible at bowling, right? Just But hang with me. Jesus said what he said because he knew that if greed finds traction in our hearts, it will impact our relationships. People around us will begin to suspect that we think that our stuff is more important to us than they are, and we may even hurt people's feelings and alienate them in order to protect our stuff. And see, I know this is true because honestly, I've found myself in this space more than once. If I'm not guarding my heart against greed, I'll begin prioritizing protecting my stuff over someone else's feelings, and I'll start living as if upgrading and accumulating is my purpose. So now that we all feel awful about ourselves, I want to show you something else that Jesus taught about greed. And thankfully, it's an incredibly liberating principle, especially if you want to begin to cultivate a more generous heart in the midst of a culture that reminds us constantly of all the stuff that we don't yet have. So he gave this insight in the midst of his most famous block of teaching that's recorded in the New Testament. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. And so on this topic, here's what Jesus said. He said, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal." And to be clear, Jesus wasn't advising against savings accounts, and he wasn't telling us that we shouldn't save for kids' college, and he wasn't suggesting that his followers should be financially irresponsible. In fact, you know, at other places in the Bible, the authors suggest that it's wise to save for life's eventualities. You know, so instead, what Jesus is going after here is this tendency inside all of us to constantly be swapping out the old for the new and to store the stuff that we don't even remember that we have. And then as he continued, he pointed his audience to an alternative way to live, a way that's better for them and better for the world. Here's how he said it. He said, "But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal." And you're like, that sounds great, Jesus. So I'm not supposed to store up treasures. I'm treasures in heaven. What are you talking about, right? Store up treasures in heaven was Jesus' way of saying, I want you to give stuff away. You say, well, how do we know that? Well, Jesus actually said that in a man named Luke's account of his life. Jesus was recorded as saying this: "Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys." In other words, Jesus told his followers, I want you to move away from a life in which you're endlessly purchasing newer and better for yourself, and I want you to redirect your focus from your wants and needs to also include someone else's. So don't be driven by that sense that we always must have that next it. He's like, that's greed. It's not good for you. It's not good for anyone else. And then as he continued, Jesus told us why. And as it turns out, this why has nothing to do with other people. It actually has to do with our hearts. Jesus said it this way: "For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be." So said a bit differently, Jesus told his followers, I want you to give some of your resources away. I want you to leverage some of what you have to benefit people who aren't you. People who have needs or organizations that exist to help people in needs. And I want you to do that over and over and over again. And as it turns out, this idea, and I call it systematic generosity, so not just a one and done, but an over and over, is right at the heart of what it means to follow Jesus. Okay, so now that established, I think it's fair to say that if you want to know where your heart is right now, you can simply examine your bank account and your credit card statements, because that will tell you where your money is going, which Jesus would say would tell you where to find your heart. Looking at where you're actually allocating your money is actually a lot more helpful than considering how you feel about generosity, because feelings can be misleading. You can ascertain the current posture of your heart, my current posture, towards generosity by examining what we actually do, because where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Years ago, I was working as a youth pastor, raking in the big bucks, you understand? It was the 90s. And I actually had an experience that affirmed Jesus' observation, as if he needed my affirmation. But I was out to lunch one day with a friend who introduced me to the wonderful world of day trading stocks. And some of you are really familiar with this, some of you don't know what it is, but it's basically you buy a stock or a group of stocks, and you're looking to sell them when they go up a little bit, sometimes on a day-to-day basis. And I came home from lunch super excited, opened an account, bought a stock, and quickly learned this was not a healthy move for me. I don't know about you. You say, well, how did you ever determine that? Well, here's what happened. After a few days, I recognized that a part of my heart had become attached to a particular stock. I would check in on it multiple times an hour to see how it was performing. And if it was up, my mood would improve. And I would be walking on air. And if it was down, a cloud of despair would descend, right? And it affected the way that I interacted with real people in the real world. And it was funny because I really had nothing to do with whether the stock was going up or down. So why did it impact my mood? I would argue my heart had shifted. And that's why Jesus said that the reason he wants his followers to regularly reallocate some of their resources was so that when they do that, their heart would actually follow. Said a bit differently, the way you evict greed from your heart is to decide to end the endless pursuit of stuff and to begin to give stuff to people who are in need. Which brings me to our big idea for today. It goes like this. Systematic generosity evicts greed from the human heart. I had a friend say once, it's like greed and generosity are incompatible roommates in the human heart. You have maybe had an incompatible roommate in college. Your heart, as it turns out, greed and generosity cannot coexist. The one will always push out the other. So systematic generosity evicts greed from the human heart because it changes your relationship to money and consequently changes your relationship to other people. Again, greed is a heart issue. That's why wherever you choose to send your treasure, your heart will follow. So now as Jesus continues, it really seems like he changes subjects, but he doesn't. So let me show you first what he said. He said, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. And then this is a helpful clarifying statement. And then he said, if then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? And it, you know, it's, you want to have like a cappuccino and go, huh, right? Yeah, like, thanks, Jesus. This really clears it up, right? Because we don't really follow, but Jesus' original audience would have. They would have understood what he was saying was something like, as your eyes direct your body, so your treasure directs your heart. As your eyes direct your body, so your treasure directs your heart. Jesus was revisiting this idea that resource allocation doesn't only tell you where your heart currently is, it can also be leveraged to move your heart to where you want it to be. And here's why I say that. There's two Greek words that Jesus used in this verse. The one translated good can also be translated generous, and the one translated bad can also be translated envious. And so a fair way to translate this verse would also be, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are generous, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are envious, your whole body will be full of darkness. And honestly, that makes sense if you think about it. I mean, have you ever met an extremely generous person who wasn't happy? You know, they're like the people you need to be careful around because if you tell them that you like their shirt, they'll like literally take it off and give it to you. Do you have people like this in your life? Yeah, back when I was in high school, I had an encounter with one that I will never forget. I was in a small group while I was in my sophomore year of high school, and our small group leader was named Wally. I'll give you a second to absorb the awesomeness of that, right? But he was a prominent investment advisor in town. And then one day after the service, I walked up to him. He always wore a suit. I was a teenager in a t-shirt, but he had this great tie on. It had polka dots. I liked the polka dots. I was like, Wally, this is working. Yeah, Wally with a polka dotted tie. Can't make that up, right? And I said, man, that is a great tie. And in response, he like took it off and gave it to me. Which, of course, raised the question to me, what am I going to do with a tie and a t-shirt, right? But anyway, that's what he did, and had a huge smile on his face when he was doing it. And then I'm carrying this tie, and I'm walking out, and I run into his son, Scott, who is also a stellar human being. And I told him what happened, and he looked back at me, and he said, oh, dude, never ask my dad for anything unless you want to own it. And I have to confess, I was 16 years old at the time, and I immediately thought of his jet black BMW. Right? But you get my point. Generous people are happy people. And in contrast, you've probably never met a greedy or envious person who was happy. And Jesus would say that that's because the body of a greedy, envious person is full of darkness because their heart has been compromised. Not because they're bad people, but because their heart has been compromised. That's why, again, greed isn't really a financial issue. It's a heart issue that Jesus wants us to clean out. He knows that until we do, we won't be able to move forward and experience the life that God intends for us. I mean, it's natural to suspect that greed will bring us life. It's like more stuff equals more life, but it doesn't. It doesn't make our lives better, and it doesn't make our lives bigger. It actually does just the opposite. Greed turns us in on ourselves. To use Jesus' analogy, we begin to suck light in with and not release light into the world. And that's why Jesus invites his followers to creatively and deliberately and systematically move towards generosity. Let's check out how he ends this thought. He said, no one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. And he says, you can't serve both God and money. In other words, he's like, either greed or God will ultimately determine the trajectory of your life. The one closes you in on yourself, and the other opens you up to others. The one leads you towards the life you were meant to live, and the other doesn't. It's simple, it's powerful, it's profound, and it's really hard to apply in our world. In fact, I've heard messages along this for my whole life, and let me tell you how these used to land with me. I'd find myself wondering, okay, I can see where you're coming from. I have a practical question, like, can I ever get a new phone or upgrade my car? Like, I mean, the battery life is down to like 4%, and I have 3 extra batteries, and it gets hot randomly, and I think I'm going to burn myself. But can I ever do that, or is that wrong? Or can I ever buy a cottage or even like a new shirt at Costco if it's on sale? Is that inbounds? Like, does this mean I can never again walk through the sliding doors of Target? Is that what we're talking about, right? I mean, we're talking kitchen gadgets, and that's a weakness, right? Yeah. How does this work? And I'm convinced that the reason so many people don't do anything with Jesus' teaching on money is that it just seems too extreme to even try. See, but I don't think Jesus was telling his followers never to buy anything new. I think that the way his teaching was intended to intersect with our lives is through something that I like to call percentage prioritized generosity. And here's what I mean. Percentage, because Jesus wants his followers to choose a percentage of their income to give away each month or each year. And practically what this means is that along with funding lifestyle and upgrading our stuff, we set aside a predetermined percentage of our resources to serve someone other than ourselves. And then to make it a priority, because that means that the money is given out, it's pre-decided to give. It's not given from what's left over. And so percentage prioritized giving, if you think about it, it can't be just a sudden reaction to being presented with a need. I mean, you know, we're late at night, we're watching cable TV, Sarah McLachlan sings Arms of the Angel, we got like a tear, and we call a number, or call a website, a QR code, whatever, right? That's good. I mean, you're helping out. But this is better when it comes to your heart, because this is a planned percentage of income that's given to fund things outside of our lifestyle each month or year. And I'm telling you, if you do this, it's amazing. It's so simple, but your priorities will be kept where they're supposed to be. things that need help on our world, people that need help will start to get help, and you actually start to look a little more like Jesus. We're generous because we are the recipients of his generosity. And here's something else that may surprise you. If you start to do this, it will actually alter your relationship to stuff. Things that you thought, I'm not sure I can move forward without that, will become things that you move forward without. And I've seen this over and over again. It's amazing. And it's freeing, and it's so good for our hearts. And so now, for those of you who are new to faith, and we took that survey, Randy shared some data last week, and there's a whole bunch of people that have crossed the line of faith at Keystone last year, and just we celebrate the fact that you've made that decision. But especially for you, I want to give you an important disclaimer on this teaching, because I'm not necessarily asking you to fund Keystone. Like, this is not the bait and switch. This is not the other shoe drops. I knew it, right? That's not what we're talking about. I mean, seriously, if you don't, the people who support this place regularly want me to tell you, if you don't trust us yet, don't give to us yet. But please give to someone or something that you do trust. Pick a percentage and give it somewhere. And here's the other thing. If you can't seem to, if you feel this like you're like grip on the resources, like, I just can't seem to do it, it's worth asking yourself why. Because without you intending it, greed may have taken root in your heart and may be stealing the life that God has for you. Can I tell you something else? You will never regret developing a habit of prioritized percentage generosity. Like, I've never met someone who opted for generosity over greed and came to regret it. Because, as I've said, you'll never meet an unhappy, generous person, and you'll never meet a happy, greedy person. So here's my challenge, pretty simple. If you don't already, and again, a whole bunch of us do, but if you don't already, would you consider prioritizing a percentage? And again, even if you never give here, the world will be a better place because you gave somewhere, and you will be on the way to keeping greed from taking root in your heart. And we will pick it up there next week. But for now, I'd love to invite you to stand, and I'll close our time in prayer. And once again this week, if you came in and you're like, I was not looking for a greed talk, great. I need prayer. We would love to pray with you. There'll be some friends over the screen to your, under the screen rather, to your left. If they were over, they'd be flying. That would be cool, but we're not doing that. And also, just a reminder, World Vision is here and would love to share about how you can help get water for people in need, and that meeting will be under the right screen right after I dismiss us. So let me close our time. Heavenly Father, we thank you and we celebrate you for your generosity that was demonstrated when you sent Jesus to offer us a hope with you after this life and to show us the way to live in this life. And we just, we confess, generosity is not what comes naturally to us. But we can see that it is the best way forward. And so I pray that by your Spirit, you would help us to really wrestle down what to do with what we've learned from Jesus. And I pray that as we open our hands and as we open our hearts, not only would we feel light coming from us and not being sucked into us, but things on earth would become a little more like you want them to be. Needs would be met, and in small ways your kingdom would come and your will would be done on earth as it is in heaven. Thank you for loving us even at our worst. Thank you for calling us to our best. And most of all, we thank you for Jesus. We thank you for the grace in which we stand. It is in his name, the name above all names, that we pray. And everyone said, Amen. Grace and peace to you, friends. We'll see you next week.